Spot. Driving. No purchase necessary.
The following is a live show streaming from two radio show producers / sports fans. May Atkinson and Josh Hall have one mission to gain your attention. This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
Hello, I'm Leonard Nimoy. The following tale of alien encounters is true, and by true, I mean false. It's all lies, but they're entertaining lies, and in the end, isn't that the real truth? The answer is no.
Those were the wise words of the late Leonard Nimoy on an episode of The Simpsons where they were parodying, I think it was The X-Files. But anyway, Mr. Nimoy, live long and prosper in heaven, sir.
Yep, live long and prosper. But he didn't even do anything, Ray.
Didn't he?
Oh, by the way, before we start the show, I have to rib you a little bit. I believe on our last episode of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All...
Our last episode? You mean my last episode?
Oh, okay, fine. On the last episode of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, which you solo hosted...
Yes.
You basically told people... And what did I tell you on the phone?
I didn't remember.
So you misremembered, like, Roger Clemens?
Yeah. No, Andy Pettit was the one that misremembered.
Oh, my goodness.
Roger Clemens was the one who coined the term misremember.
Folks, I called Ray on Monday evening and said, listen, I'm at work. And this was the truth. I was at work and stressed out at work, so I wasn't mentally in the zone, so to say, to do the show. So I told Ray a little fib to tell you guys, hey, you know, I'm sick. I can't do the show. You know what Ray does? He goes on the show and tells people that I had a state of emergency.
Which you technically did.
Did you know I had three people text me asking me if everything was okay?
That's awesome.
No, it's not awesome.
That shows that people are listening to us, Josh.
Well, anyway, and also you told people where to listen to us now, so I might as well be a part of it and get it out of the way. Okay, this is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, which you can find on...
sfmsports.net, and that is our main home, ladies and gentlemen.
Yep, and you can also see us on Audio Boom on sfmsports.net, and if you want to like our Facebook page, what is the name of it?
It is called the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All Podcast.
And if you want to hashtag hit up the Twitter, where do you go?
At bsportsfree, the number 4-all.
And before I get to my blog, what are our new podcasting homes?
We are now on Spreaker and Stitcher, all at the same time as SFM and Audio Boom as well, because all the RSS feeds sync together, so it's able to, once I get the uploading right. It's still kind of a... Still kind of a noob when it comes to this system, but I'm getting it down. I'm more of a production type guy, so I like to edit and I like to produce and I like to do everything else like that. Social media, websites, never really was my strong point.
Yeah, well, speaking of Stitcher, though, I'm really excited about our new venture going on Stitcher, because it features podcasts such as the Joe Rogan Experience and also the critically acclaimed Serial podcast, which just took off like wildfire. So it's nice to be on Stitcher, and it's nice to be on Spreaker. And the name of my blog, of course, The Sunday Night Sports Delight, which you can find on Blogger, or just Google it easily, whichever.
The Sunday Night Sports Delight is not taken by anything else?
No, not really. Just Google and Blogger, which is pretty much the same thing.
So it's not on a more questionable website? Because, like I said, the Sunday Night Sports Delight just sounds a little dirty.
Yeah, but it's actually been gaining steam, and actually people are liking it. So
is it gaining steam, or is it steamy?
All right, you know what? Let's just drop it there. And, oh, by the way, my video of the weekend, of course, was a short 14-second video of Katzengano versus Ronda Rousey. And by the way, folks, this opening segment of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All lasted longer, five times as longer as Katzengano did.
Actually, we lasted a full UFC round. Well, actually, isn't female rounds, they're 3 minutes and not 5 minutes?
No, championship rounds, I believe, are 5 rounds, 5 minutes.
Okay, I was referring to Strikeforce, the now defunct Strikeforce, but that's a little taste of what we're talking about on this week's show. Also, our main topic of questionable abilities is the fact that I'm trying to speak right now, and the Terps are our number one priority right now because the Maryland women are number one in the Big Ten, the Maryland men number 10 in the AP overall. So those guys and those gals are going to be on our mind in this week's episode of the Baltimore Sports Free For All. Also, we're going to be talking about Ravens free agency. We had to say goodbye to a name. We may be saying goodbye to other names going forward as free agency begins next week. Orioles spring training. Let's got some notes right there. And quite a little interesting incident that happened down in Sarasota. And finally, yes, Ronda Rousey. We'll be talking about her victory over Kat Zingano this past weekend, and plus our two-minute rants.
Yep, and the topic of Ronda Rousey, of course, is she the most fearsome athlete in the world today? Not the most fearsome female athlete, the most fearsome athlete, period.
Okay, I can go hand-in-hand with that. Yes, well, speaking of fearsome, the Maryland Terrapins didn't look so fearsome against the Michigan Wolverines at the start of the game, but it was... you know, their strong defense at the end of the first half. They made a comeback and then eventually didn't trail in the second half. And that game just ended up being what you would expect out of a Maryland-Michigan game in 2015. As for the Wisconsin game, wow. Well, yeah, let's talk about that for a little bit.
Des Wells, star of the game, no question about
26 it. 26 points for Mr. Des Wells, the senior. Got a heck of a curtain call, by the way, on senior night against Michigan. He scored the final basket of the game, and then they put in a bunch of freshmen. Everyone's like, shoot. Like, no, don't shoot.
Well, it was more like a senior day since it took place in the early afternoon.
That's right. It happened at noon. I should know. I went to the game.
Now, let me ask you this. Would you rather have a senior night, which seems like it'll just go on all night, or would you rather have a senior day where you just play a game in the earlier afternoon and then you enjoy the rest of your day just going to little social events and dinners and what have you? And
I would say senior day sounds a little more enticing because senior night, it's wham bam thank you ma'am.
Exactly. But looking
in more ways than one.
Yeah. And looking at this game, the past Tuesday night game against then number 5 Wisconsin, then number 14 Maryland men, were facing Wisconsin. I believe they were, a 7-point underdog at home facing the Badgers?
Yes, they were, and it turned out to be in the opposite direction, as it was the Maryland Terrapins who reigned supreme over the Wisconsin Badgers. Did you see the flash mob, though, at the beginning of the game?
Yeah, the flash mob and Testudo were really getting the crowd amped up during that game.
Well,
it was amazing.
Half the crowd was the flash mob because they were all like, they took off their shirts in sync and revealed the yellow all around the stadium and were dancing in tandem with each other, and Testudo had some sick moves.
Now, do you have to be a part of the student section to be a part of the flash mob, or can you just buy a ticket and say, you know what? I want to be a member of the flash mob. I want to get involved in this. Or is it just basically...
Well, you could be in the upper rafters and try to participate with them as well, but I don't know how much that would reign supreme since it's not in sync.
Yeah, I mean, but the equivalent of that, of course, is like being the lone fan back in 2010 during an Orioles September game and trying to start a wave, and there's only 200 people at the game. It doesn't work.
Or maybe a couple of fans who try to start a movement of walking out of the ballpark for a ticket that you paid for.
Very funny. Very funny.
You
took a little jab at me, but that's okay.
No, I took a little. Wait, you were a part of that?
I was young and stupid back then, yes.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, I never knew that. Okay.
You know what the death nail was of the Wisconsin Badgers facing the Terps? And I think you can agree with me on this. Way too many 3-point shots. 6 for 22 for the Badgers, 27.3% made. And also, 7 for 12 in free throws, 58.3%. Field goals, 20 for 52, 38.5%. Just a totally inefficient game for the Badgers, which normally they are a much better shooting team than they were when they headed into Xfinity Center.
Yeah, what do I say on this podcast every single week is that the Maryland Terrapin men are second in the nation in free throw shooting.
Well, second in the nation in free throw shooting, but let's not forget, too, that in 3-point shooting, Badgers are pretty decent themselves, and usually the very good teams, such as Duke, such as Wisconsin, make their 3-point shots and make them like, you know, just headhunters, just headhunting on the lesser opponents. But the Terps, on the other hand, though, they took their 3-point shots when they had to. 2 for 7, 28.6% of them made. By the way, one of those 3-point shots was a crucial shot by Des Wells, who ended up with 26 points, 7 rebounds, 5 defensive, 2 offensive, and 4 assists. And it's weird that we usually bring up Melo Trimbo, who's having a great freshman season, and we bring up Jake Lehman whenever he has a solid game. But I really think in these types of environments, big games, Des Wells seems to thrive more than any other Terp.
Yes, and he'll be able to thrive for the remainder of you know, he's going to be in the Big Ten tournament. They're going to be at a top five seed right now with the Big Ten tournament, and then it all depends on where they go in that tournament to where they go to the big dance. Des Wells has got a few good games left in him, and hopefully we can see some more out of this Maryland Terrapin men, because it has just been a fun ride this season. And Maryland ranked in the top 10 for the first time since February 3rd of 2003.
That's incredible right there. By the way, before we move on to the Michigan game, Seth Greenberg, of course, was calling that game for ESPN on Tuesday, and I think he was criticizing the fan base for storming the court after they beat number 5. Big deal, little deal, no deal. What's your thoughts on it?
Well, I remember him saying that, oh, come on, Maryland, act like you've been there before. And I'm saying to myself, well, all of those students have never been there before.
Exactly.
I mean, the last time Maryland won a national championship, they said, you've won a national championship. Don't storm the court. I'm thinking to myself, they haven't won a national championship. They were not a part of Maryland when Maryland won it so many years ago. The people that were a part of that college are now in their mid-30s.
If we were talking Ravens fans storming the field after a win...
Well, that can't happen.
Well, no, that can't happen. But if it did happen, yeah, if it did happen, that would be ugly. But yeah, if that did happen, okay, I would get Seth Greenberg's point of acting like you've been there before, but... Does this guy not realize, I mean, I know he's coached in college basketball before, but does he not realize that the students, the faces change every 3-4 years?
Exactly. College basketball and college sports in general have a very high turnover rate.
Or two years if we were being fortunate.
And those people have never been there before. So that's the first time they beat like a top five team in the nation. Yeah, they'll storm the court. And don't be a Mike Krzyzewski kind of guy. It says, I don't like it when they storm the court. Oh, if they were our rival, they wouldn't be leaving the ACC.
Is that your Mike Krzyzewski voice?
Yeah, and you may have also ignored a rape case. But no, I'm not. I'll be talking about that.
Is this cheap shot night? I took a cheap shot at Kat Zingano. You took a cheap shot at me for being a part of the walkout, and now we're taking shots at... All right, whatever. But moving on to Senior Day, where the Terps had a very comfortable victory, 66-56, against the Michigan Wolverines. The Maryland Terrapins were very efficient in their three-point shots, more so than anything else. Three-point shots, 11 for 22, 50%, which was more than their 44.7% of the field goals made. That usually is going to help you win basketball games, especially their free-throw shots, 13 for 15 for the Terrapins.
What did I say?
Free throw shots, you got to make them.
Yep.
Absolutely. And on the bench, though, Jake Lehman had a solid game. He had 10 points. He had a steal. And also, Melo Trimble going off once again, 19 points, 5 assists, 4 rebounds. Des Wells had another solid game, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, 13 points. By the way, you know who Melo Trimble is starting to remind me of with the assists? And I really don't know if we should put him in the same category.
Do you really want to name drop right now?
John Wall.
Okay.
No, John
not,
Wall.
Not John Wall as of late for the Wizards.
But when John Wall was on the Kentucky Wildcats that 1 year.
You can go with that, but not John Wall right now for the Wizards. I mean, that guy has the Wizards in general, what the heck has happened to the Wizards?
Well, I'll tell you what. They
lost to the 76ers, Josh.
They need to go back to the early 2000s formula when they drafted guys like Steve Blake and Juan Dixon just to get ticket sales up in the Maryland area, because the Maryland Terrapins stock is up right now on the men's side. The women's side really don't have to worry about their stock dropping anytime soon. They basically are the outright Big Ten champions, basically have a perfect...
No, they are the Big Ten champion, regular season champions, because...
Not outright because they still have to win the tournament.
Still win the title, but at the same time, though, they are the only... I mean, they're the third team in Big Ten history to have a perfect season in Big Ten.
Yep, 18-0 in the conference, 27-2 overall. By the way, congratulations to Lady Terps head coach Brenda Fries, Big Ten Women's Basketball Coach of the Year her first season.
Right? I say it every week, Josh. I say it every week.
They're going to get their ass kicked.
You have to stop me. You have to stop me from saying that. Yeah. But they're going to get their ass kicked in the Big Ten, right?
No, they're not.
Right?
No.
Where you at, haters? Where you at?
Yeah, and looking at the games they played this past week, Indiana at home, 83-72, comfortable victory. Road game against number 25, Northwestern, 69-40. And before we go on here, is it just me, or does it seem like women's basketball, unless you're in the top five, if you're anything lower than that facing a top five team, the chances of you being competitive are slim to none? Northwestern, number 25 versus a number 5 Maryland Lady Terps, well, then number 5, now they're number 4 in the AP polls. It just seems like the competition, the field of competition's way off.
I could see that in women's college basketball because you think about it every year. Who are the teams that are the mainstays? UConn.
Baylor, UConn, South Carolina.
Tennessee.
Notre Dame. Yeah, Tennessee, especially during the Pat Summitt days. By the way, I hope she's doing well because, you know, you don't really hear many good news about Pat Summitt nowadays.
But at the same time, the teams that you mentioned and that I mentioned as well, they're the ones that are the mainstays in the top five. And for the longest time, it was UConn that was completely undefeated for all those years under Gino Auriemma. And it seems like there's a little bit of a landscape changing here since Maryland moved to the Big Ten. Now all of a sudden people are saying, well, look at this hot team coming over there to a new conference and saying, here we are, we're making a statement, and that is the Maryland Lady Terps. And I think that it's safe to say you can maybe put them up there with the elite as well. I mean, they have won a national championship in the last 10 years.
By the way, center Brianna Jones in Maryland's 69-48 win over number 25 Northwestern. 14 points, 13 rebounds, 3 blocks. This girl is a beast. She is a beast on defense right there. And the Maryland Lady Terps, I tell you what, when it comes to defensive basketball, I think they are easily, hands down, the best defensive team in all of women's college basketball. I think they could give UConn a run for their money if they went up against them right now, the way they are playing defense. And speaking of the Lady Terps in their undefeated season, their season has come to a close, well, regular season. Now they're moving on to the Big Ten tournament.
They will not be playing until Friday, by the way, because they have a double bye. They are number one seed.
Yep, and they will, I believe that tournament's March the 4th through the 8th. So, yeah, they do have that bye. And
double bye.
But yeah, the double bye. So you're going to be going up against a well-rested Lady Terps team. And before we close out the weekend, of course, getting back to the men's side of things, they have two more games to play. Which, basically, you look at these games on paper, they really don't look like they're going to be much competitive games. But then again, we go back 6 weeks ago against Iowa on the road. And
both these games are on the road, Josh. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Away from Xfinity Center, that's a little bit of a stretch for the Maryland Terps. So we'll see how they do against Nebraska and Rutgers. But as of right now, can you honestly say that both the basketball team season first inaugural seasons in the Big Ten were a success?
They were absolutely a success, and even though I think it was Joe Lunardi, who is a top bracketology expert in college basketball, has said the Terps right now are a 3 seed at best, 4 seed at worst, a possible 2 seed if they win the Big Ten tournament. Do I think the Maryland men are going to win the Big Ten tournament easily when their time comes around? Probably not, but then again, we did see them handle a very stout Wisconsin team. And as far as the Lady Terps go, they are just making the Big Ten into mincemeat right now.
It's like, hi, how you guys doing? Did y'all have a nice time? Well, guess what? We're here now. We've arrived. That is the Maryland Terrapin women.
This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
MLB spring training exhibition games. We can actually say that now. It's this week, obviously, is the start of the MLB spring training exhibition games.
This was supposed to be an expedition.
Expedition?
An exhibition.
You're screwed up your Rocky IV lines there, buddy.
Yeah. I mean, Rocky went on an expedition through the mountains to fight Ivan Drago.
Yeah, I mean, if I was watching my boxer Apollo Creed getting beaten that badly by Ivan Drago, I would be mixing up expedition and exhibition too.
I'd be in the ring ready to fight the guy. I'd Roman Reigns spear that guy.
No, you won't. No, you wouldn't.
Well, I'd hit the wall.
Don't act like the majority of the male phone callers, sports callers, that thought they would take on Ronda Rousey. And yeah, but that's another segment for later in this show. But yes, MLB spring training exhibition games are finally here as the Orioles will start off the exhibition season against the Detroit Tigers, the team that they knocked off in 3 games in the American League Divisional Series. And then we had the American League Championship Series that we'd like to kind of forget about.
Everybody wants to forget about the American League Championship Series. Just like in 2012, everybody wants to remember the run but wants to forget about Raul Ibanez.
I still can't believe they let that guy get away with all that. Still can't believe it. But anyway, yes, we are finally excited for the exhibition games that are taking place with the Baltimore Orioles. And looking at the roster that's set in place and looking at their recent intra-squad game. Is it inter-squad or intra-squad? intra-squad games that the Orioles had this past weekend, where, guess what? Matt Wieters batted leadoff, and Everett Cabrera, the Orioles' recently acquired infielder, batted leadoff against each other. So it was pretty interesting, and either way, the Orioles win the intra-squad games, but now the wins, the losses, the at-bats, the innings pitched, they are finally going to count for those that need to make the team.
Yeah, but to say the intra-squad games, they count for each other, and now the stats that you gained against each other are now null and void. Of course, that's spring training all together in terms of stats. But did you also notice that in those intra-squad games, Nolan Reimold went a full game?
He went a full game?
Yes, he did.
He didn't sprain anything or chip a bone or anything like that?
Josh, that usually happens during the regular season, when he usually will start off like maybe a first couple of weeks, and then he'll go into the doldrums and then become Nolan Reimold injury prone, who says he's not, but he is.
By the way, before we talk exhibition games, real quick, what are your thoughts on MLB's new stance on making the game quicker with the batter standing in the batter's box, not taking 1 foot out or 2 feet out, and trying to quicken the pace of the game?
I like the idea. If it pisses David Ortiz off, I'm all for it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I do like the fact that they're timing pitchers to throw pitches in between at bats. So
yeah, because, look, the elephant in the room, though, let's actually enforce the in-between inning breaks.
Yeah, exactly.
That the times that they're supposed to be.
Yeah. I think the in-game action should be a little bit quicker in terms of the pitching at bat selection, because you usually see guys just stepping out of the batter's box and just walking around the backstop for a little bit, trying to find their groove as they take a timeout.
Nomar Garciaparra used to always drive me nuts with the way he was adjusting his gloves after every single pitch.
That's like playing a pickup game of football and then calling a timeout and not even realizing how long the timeout's supposed to be. It just seems like everybody's getting up, going into their bags and grabbing water, and when are we going to snap the ball next?
I've got an even better example. A guy at your local gym who decides he wants to take a little bit of a break in between sets, and he, instead of taking a minute break, he takes like a 5 minute break in between sets of like 5 reps.
You know what I hate at the gym? Guys who go to the gym, they get all dressed up for the gym, and 80% of their time they're at the gym, they're talking to four other people.
They're talking to four other people, or they are constantly on their cell phone, and no, it is not you taking notes on your workout. That is you Facebooking, my friend.
You know what else I hate, too? Neighbors who call the cops on you during the day for loud noise.
Yeah, that was that was something that happened, not in our experience, but that was something that did happen down in Sarasota to one Buck Showalter. Showalter decided he had a very good idea, wanted to simulate crowd noise for the outfielders and see how they could feel balls with the distraction of the crowd noise playing on a loop. And that loop that they played was one was Camden Yards after Delmon Young hit that go-ahead double in Game 2 of the ALDS.
Yeah, and of course, I was at that game as well, and that was one of the loudest experiences I ever had at an MLB game, whether it be regular season or postseason.
All right, what's the loudest experience that you've ever had?
What, at Oriole Park at Camden Yards?
No, I mean ever. I mean, you said it's the loudest experience you've had at Camden Yards. What's your loudest experience ever?
Well, before that game, because that was a kind of a career high in terms of noise pollution, but I would say the 2004 Sunday night game, Ravens against the Browns, where Ed Reed returned a 107-yard interception return for a touchdown. That was a pretty loud ovation.
Okay, so they had the crowd noise playing on loop in the stadium, and yeah, somebody that was living close to Sarasota, Florida, in their stadium, they decided...
What, they live in the backyard?
Yeah. They called up and called the cops on the Baltimore Orioles, and that was kind of funny the way that happened. It made a national news story because, hey, that was a creative idea by Buck. It's just that, hey, you also pissed off the neighbors.
Well, Florida...
lousy kids and your damn baseball.
What do they normally... I don't want to be cruel here, but what do they call Florida? Heaven's retirement home or something or other, or just people where people just go to just lay in the sunset as they get into their elderly age?
Well, Florida is a place where people migrate to go to retire because that tax burden, not that high.
That's why LeBron James went when he was with the Miami Heat. But yeah, looking at the spring training games and avoiding police interactions via loud crowd noise or simulated crowd noise, the Baltimore Orioles will be getting ready to take on the Detroit Tigers, who are looking to, I guess, avenge their three-game sweep in against the ALDS. But then again, if you're really thinking that going into spring training, geez, you have issues right there. Like, I am still mad about that game. Let's take it out on them in the first game. Yeah, but we're only playing rookies third inning on. I mean, it's not going to be that eventful.
That, and also, I mean, when did it happen, Josh? In October? Wow, October seems so long ago because I remember back in October.
Warmer weather.
It was warm.
It was warm.
You know, prior to Valentine's Day,
there was life. The grass was green. The leaves were brown. It was nice.
Yeah, prior to Valentine's Day, this was a very mild winter. I can no longer say that, thank you very much, second half of February. I mean, it was registered as one of the coldest months in history, and February was just a very, very cold month, and still icy and snowy. Still some snow and ice on the ground. Still some more coming. Lousy smarch weather.
But to kind of get into this segment here and to close it out, we are going to be talking about what we are looking forward to this spring training. Of course, every episode of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All leading up to Orioles opening day, we're going to be looking week to week as to who is impressing in spring training, who's on a cold streak, and who's on the bubble to get cut from the non-roster invitees, the 40-man roster, and what have you. Let's start with you, Ray. What are a couple keys you're looking to for this upcoming spring training exhibition games?
How about the comeback of Manny Machado, Matt Wieters, and Chris Davis? How they perform in spring training? Yeah, I know the stats are blah, 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 but it's nice to see you come off of an injury or a suspension and do that and come out with some strong fire, because Chris Davis looked like he could not see the ball at all last year. That's probably why he got popped with an Adderall suspension. He was trying to be able to see the ball. And Matt Wieters had one of the highest batting averages of his career before he went down. And Manny Machado had to go through strife all throughout the season.
Yeah, two things to keep in mind here, folks. The first one, yes, Chris Davis is playing in MLB exhibition games, but he still has one more game of his suspension left to kind of gut through before he can suit up for the Orioles in the regular season.
Ain't that a bitch, and it's opening day. They couldn't win one game for him in the championship series.
Yep, and second of all, Matt Wieters not scheduled to have his throwing arm be at 100% until March the 17th. So it'll be a while before we see Matt Wieters attempting to gun down opposing base stealers.
Well, not that long. You're talking, what, 2 weeks?
About 2 week window.
I mean, Remember, we're already...
Just to be at 100%.
We are already a few days into March. I mean, where's March going all of a sudden? Now, before you know it, we'll be able to have outside activities now.
Yeah, well, a couple keys I'm looking forward to in spring training. The first one, of course, is the battle of the utility infielders. You're going to be having Ryan Flaherty defend his rightful spot against Erich Cabrera, the former All-Star infielder from the San Diego Padres, now a newly acquired infielder for the Baltimore Orioles, not only looking to find a decent spot on the roster, but possibly take Ryan Flaherty's at-bats away from the guy. I mean, you look at the last several years, Flaherty and Cabrera, their stats are comparable. You look at the batting averages, you look at home runs, they basically are the same player, except Cabrera is a much better base dealer, which is why the Orioles picked him up in the first place. I think if Ryan Flaherty, if his batting average and on-base percentage, if they are better than Erich Cabrera's, even if Erich Cabrera has about 6 stolen bases this preseason, I think Flaherty will keep his infielder job. But then again, we've seen stranger things happen.
Well, yeah. I mean, you look at Ryan Flaherty's regular season stats, and you're saying to yourself, how does this guy find work every year? But then all of a sudden, you look at what he did in the postseason last year, and the fact that the guy shows up to work every day, you can kind of see how Buck takes a shine to the guy, especially since he's willing to play every single position.
Is it fair to call Ryan Flaherty the Joe Flacco of the Orioles, except he's not? He doesn't start every game. He isn't one of the highest paid. But he does get on your nerves a good portion of the season. But when it comes to postseason, that's pretty much why you have him on the roster in the first place.
I would say Adam Jones is more of the Joe Flacco of the Baltimore Orioles, because he's the one that's the most criticized as opposed to Ryan Flaherty. Yeah, Ryan Flaherty gets a good bulk of the criticism, but at the same time, I don't see Ryan Flaherty winning World Series MVP anytime soon. Although Koji Uehara did, so stranger things have happened.
And another one to keep an eye on is outfielder Daryl Alvarez, the 26-year-old Cuban prospect who had an outstanding minor league campaign in 2014 with his on-base percentage, his batting average, and basically his assist in the outfield, which after the departure of Nick Markakis, and Nick Markakis, doesn't it feel weird he's talking trash about the Orioles?
And it really did. I read that I read that interview and those statements that he was making, and I was saying, wow, this is a guy who was labeled as a Peter Angelos guy. He was labeled as a hometown type of person.
Greek connection.
You didn't really see him as the kind of guy that would burn a bridge. I wouldn't necessarily call that burning a bridge, but it's just saying to yourselves, hey, anything they say about my departure is a lie, that I was let go because of such and such and not because of this. When it is perfectly understandable and believable that they let the guy go because of his age, the money that he was asking for, and the fact that he just recently came off of a neck injury.
Didn't they basically publicly say that, well, we didn't want to give him that money because he is having neck issues? And yeah, looking back on it now Nick Markakis, it may be a couple weeks into the regular season before we even see him suit up for the Atlanta Braves. And yes, if he plays an entire major league career, he may get the 3,000 hits, but at the same time, his batting average and on-base percentage, his doubles, home runs, they've all dipped in the last several seasons. Whereas we look into right field, where guys like Travis Snyder, Alejandro Deyasa, and Daryl Alvarez, who seems like a long shot to make the team, but has all of the attributes in the world to make the Orioles roster sometime down the line in 2015, it's safe to say that if Daryl Alvarez has an outstanding exhibition campaign for the Orioles in March, maybe not in the beginning of April, but I guarantee you by the middle of May, we'll see Daryl Alvarez in an Orioles uniform.
We're going to be seeing a lot of unfamiliar faces this year, considering that the Orioles didn't make many offseason acquisitions, so to speak. But I look at everybody talking about how can you replace Nelson Cruz and how can you bring this back up in. The fact that people forget, they won the American League East by 12 games, a wide margin. 12 games is nothing to shy at right there. And they lost their best home run batter in Nelson Cruz, and they lost Nick Markakis as well. But yeah, they want to look at replacing Nelson Cruz. Wieters, Machado, and Davis full-time are your replacements for Nelson Cruz. Let's face the facts. They went the distance last year without those guys, and for the most part, and with that, I just can't see that big of a drop-off. It's definitely not going to be last place in the AL East. I'm going to say that make a little friendly wager here, Josh, and do it in spring training. If the Orioles finish in last place...
That's not going to happen.
If the Orioles finish in last place in the American League East...
We got to change our names for the show.
No. I'm not going to be doing that.
Jack Lame.
Oh, yeah. We'll just change our names on the show for 1 week only.
Yeah. But Jason Stark just released a nice piece on ESPN.com on the MLB section talking about how the Orioles can replace Nelson Cruz. And here's an interesting statistic between Davis, Wieters, Machado with the total extra base hits. You know how many extra base hits Davis, Wieters, and Machado had in 2013? 215. You know how many they had in 2014? 78. You know how much of a drop-off that was? 137 extra base hits left off of the Orioles roster.
The Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
NFL free agency begins next week, and we've already seen a couple of casualties for the Baltimore Ravens. Jacoby Jones, bye-bye, buddy.
Yeah, but what else was he known as on this show, of course?
This little gem.
Now, this is going on to another Jacoby Jones, easy for me to say.
What'd you say, Joby Jones?
Jaboki Jones.
Jaboki Jones.
That's a new sports name.
I have to think about that one. Jaboki Jones. Yeah. Where would be the best place to put him?
Yeah,
no more of that right there.
Joby Cones.
Yeah, Joby Cones. He hasn't been the same since he got sweet peed.
The dancing man.
The dancing man.
Number 12.
Indeed. Yeah, he was on Dancing with the Stars. Let me see. Then he ran into Trendon Holiday and hurt his leg. And then
Brandon Trawick?
Brandon Trawick. Okay, why did I say Trendon Holiday?
Yeah, well, he was a secondary player, too.
Okay, so Brandon Trawick. And he was Sweet Pete as well. We all remember that little incident where he got hit over the head with a champagne bottle by a stripper. And then all of a sudden, he got tripped up by Mike Tomlin on the sidelines.
Yeah.
The guy has not been the same since and just wasn't worth the money that they were paying the guy. And they said, hey, Jacoby Jones, you did some wonderful things for this organization, but we wish you well in your future endeavors because it will not be here.
Yeah, in 2014, of course, was less than memorable than 2013 because the guy was just a basic butterfingers with punt returns and, you know, receptions, or at least targeted receptions.
Yeah, people were making fun of him for dropping passes that he was supposed to catch, but at the same time, he was also dropping kick returns and fumbling them. And I'm thinking,
that's your bread and butter, dude.
That is your main bread and butter. That is what people pay you to do. They didn't pay BJ Sams to be a running back. They paid him to be a kick returner. They didn't pay Lamont Brightfield to be was he a cornerback or was he a wide receiver?
He was a kick returner, wide receiver.
But he was like number 45. He had some weird number too. It was like 45 or something like that. But yeah, they didn't pay Lamont Brightfield to be a receiver. They paid him to be a punter.
That is a name from the past, man.
Lamont Brightfield?
Yeah.
What about Dave Zasadil? I mean, still in the league. He was a punter at that time when Lamont Brightfield.
Still a punter in this league.
Yeah, and he was actually a pretty decent punter too for an NFL team. And yet, Lamont Brightfield, not a name you hear anymore. BJ Sams, not a name you might hear. Will Jacoby Jones suffer the same fate as one BJ Sams, who was a great kick returner for the Baltimore Ravens and then left them and hadn't been heard from since? Will he become another Dante Hall, who with the Kansas City Chiefs then all of a sudden dropped off the face of the earth?
Well, I'll look at it this way, since we're kind of doing this reflection on Jacoby Jones. Nope, not Joby Cones, but the dancing man himself, Jacoby Jones. Yeah, we're not doing a remembrance on Chris Kenny because, let's face it, you know, defensive lineman in his 30s, just oft injured, not as productive as guys who are younger than him and better than him, which is why the Ravens made an expense out of Chris Kenny in terms of cutting him.
Yeah, can we also do an in memoriam of Terrence Cody? No.
No, no, no.
That will not go over too well.
And who was the cornerback that just got arrested recently that was a reserve? Yeah, that guy, yeah. The guy that never saw the field, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
That's not even news. But yeah, getting to Jacoby Jones, which is bigger news than all of this, because let's face it, when the Ravens signed him in 2012 after he had a disastrous showing for the Texans in their 2011-12 playoff game, Jacoby Jones just wanted to find a second chance with a different team, and so he goes to the Baltimore Ravens and not only sees time as a deep threat as a wide receiver, but gets plenty of time to show off his skills in kick returns and punt returns, where he was one of the best in the league in 2012 and earned a Pro Bowl nod.
And became a factor in the Super Bowl 47 run that the Baltimore Ravens had. One may argue that if he did not make that kick return, then the 49ers would have won that game after the lights went out.
But I don't think that's the play you remember Jacoby Jones for. You remember him most of all for the play in Denver, the Mile High Miracle, or you can call it the Denver Rainbow, or the play where...
What? I don't think anybody calls it the Denver Rainbow.
The Denver Rainbow. Well, it looked like a rainbow. It curved up from Joe Flacco and then just hit Jacoby Jones right in the breadbasket.
Is it like the rainbow from the More You Know campaign with the star?
Well, that you mean the one that Katy Perry kind of flew on in Super Bowl 49 halftime show?
Her and her little robo sharks.
Those sharks were the... They were the best. I mean, come on, you had to like them.
I like the pine. I like the pine trees more than I like the sharks.
The left shark was the best shark. Everybody knows that. But Jacoby Jones, yes, the play we all remember him for, the Mile High Miracle, late in the fourth quarter against the Denver Broncos secondary, where Joe Flacco, with just several seconds left on the clock, or less than a minute left on the clock, throws up a huge gamble of a pass, and Joe Flacco beforehand was having a solid postseason before he went on the legendary run. Jacoby Jones was a part of that legendary run. He played a huge factor in that big catch against Denver, and as soon as he made that catch against the Denver Broncos and ran that easily in for a touchdown reception, that just took the air right out of Sports Authority Stadium on that fateful day.
Is that what it's called now?
The Mile High Miracle, yeah.
No, I mean Sports Authority Stadium. I always referred to it as Mile High Stadium.
Mile High Stadium, brought to you by Sports Authority.
Wasn't it at one point in Vesco Field?
It was in Vesco Field.
In Vesco Field at Mile High Stadium. Now it's just Mile High Stadium.
Brought to you by Sports Authority.
No, come on. Let's just call them by their real names. Like, I don't call it the Rogers Center. I call it Sky Dome. I've always referred to it as Sky Dome. That's where WrestleMania was at. It will forever be known as the Sky Dome. And Yeah, Jacoby Jones can say that he was a part of history for the Baltimore Ravens and not a part of history like the Waterboy was a part of history or like a part of history where Cam Cameron got a Super Bowl ring.
Now, let me ask you this. Where does
Joby Cones.
Where does Joby Cones, I'm kidding, where does Jacoby Jones rank in terms of impact players the Ravens had in the last, say, 8 seasons? Not so much guys who were long-term like Ray Lewis, Ed Reed, John Ogden, but let's just say guys who were key contributors for their team successes.
Okay, Jermaine Lewis, like he was in the early 2000s?
Yeah.
That's where I would rank Jacoby Jones at, is he's a poor man's Jermaine Lewis.
Really? You are willing to put him at a poor man's Jermaine Lewis, even though Jacoby Jones seemed to have more mainstream success than Jermaine Lewis?
Yeah, maybe the next generation of Jermaine Lewis. Maybe that would be the better choice of words right there. Yeah, because Jacoby Jones got to be on Dancing with the Stars. Woo! That seems to be quite the career pusher, right?
Yeah, well.
So Dancing with the Stars, then he did his whole thing, and then he got sweepied.
Yeah, but does he land on another team quickly, but of course at a fair price? Because I really think his window of opportunity to be a third wide receiver on an NFL team, I think that went out the door last season.
Yeah, he's not going to be – I don't think he'll be picked up immediately, Josh, just because he did decline the last couple of years. Somebody's going to want him out there, but maybe he'll be picked up day 4, day 5 of free agency.
Yeah, and as we looked at the cuts of Jacoby Jones, Chris Canty, and several other players that the Ravens cut, of course, many other of the 32 NFL teams are making cuts around the league, and also franchising tag. By the way, the franchise tag was only applied to 5 players this offseason. 5 players. Does that just tell you that the league is kind of being frugal with the cap space nowadays than they used to be?
Well, considering the fact that these contracts have ballooned completely out of control to where guys are getting paid and having $16 million cap hits, I mean, wow, that's a good portion of your salary cap right there.
And if you heard Steve Bisciotti in his recent owner's press conference, also with him, Ozzie Newsome, John Harbaugh, they were talking about Torrey Smith, and Steve Bisciotti basically said the way the market's set up now, Torrey Smith has pretty much priced himself out of our price range. That tells you a lot about the market with free agents, wide receivers, and also Pernell McPhee, too. Pernell McPhee, if he was franchise tagged by the Baltimore Ravens, was set to make $13 million. Pernell McPhee, Torrey Smith, I love you guys. You are productive when you're on the field, but you guys are not worth over $12 million. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Torrey Smith, where was he at the beginning of the season? We were thinking to ourselves, and then all of a sudden he showed up, became a decent factor.
Yeah, you don't pay that guy $12 million a year.
Yeah, just not yet, because Torrey Smith needs a couple more years under his belt to where he can say that I am the perennial number one guy. We'll see what he does in another system, maybe, but at the same time, maybe the Ravens can sign him at a discount.
Well, I mean, he is a solid wide receiver, don't get me wrong, but is he worth putting a franchise tag on? And you also have to pay that cap space as well, because unless you can come up with a good figure to be cap friendly and keep you under the cap and be able to give you room to breathe in terms of signing players to 1-year deals, because the Ravens still have the draft. They still have to get rookie players to join their team, guys from the practice squad.
Hey, just because they're drafting lower this year, does not mean that they can't find a diamond in the rough, because Ozzie Newsome is capable of finding that guy that just stands out to him and can become a perennial player. Matt Elam maybe or maybe not be that guy because he regressed last year. I think that one of the more big things that you got to do in free agency before you even get to free agency is Haloti Ngata. You got to restructure that contract. $16 million cap hit right now.
Lardarius Webb.
As it currently stands, he's had a $12 million hit right now. That guy is not worth a $12 million cap hit. He's going to be taking a pay cut, or he's going to be adios. He's going to be walking, limping out of Baltimore. And that if they cut him after like June 1st, according to CapSource, the Ravens will be saving over $8 million.
But they would still be chewing up about $7 million, which wouldn't help matters in cap space right there.
It would help cap space in terms of the $8 million. That would save them right there and then going for years forward. But Lardarius Webb, the guy's got to work out something in a contract, because the guy's got some redemption to follow after getting hurt and just hasn't been the same player ever since tearing his ACL.
Yeah, and when Lardarius Webb and Jimmy Smith, who were key starters as the cornerbacks for the Baltimore Ravens, when they were healthy, they were very solid contributors on that defense. Of course, we saw how that secondary fell apart without those two later during the year. But I guess you could say, yeah, Lardarius Webb was on the team, but having an injured back as a cornerback doesn't really help matters in terms of coverage against opposing wide receivers.
Yeah, and a little bit of safety help wouldn't hurt either. Will Hill, one of the standouts for the Baltimore Ravens, I think you should re-sign him. And then looking at free agent safeties right now and what is available out there, Devin McCourty obviously comes to mind from the New England Patriots. Also Raheem Moore, also Denoris Cersei from the Buffalo Bills. Antrell Roll, Mike Adams, a couple of sexy names on there. Sergio Brown, Stevie Brown. You thought he was Stevie Johnson at first. No, that's Steve Johnson from the Buffalo Bills.
I can't believe he converted to tight end. I still scratch my head over that.
Yeah, Steve Johnson, who blamed God for dropping a pass against the Pittsburgh Steelers in overtime. Not to be confused with that guy. But one of those safeties, you think the Ravens might pick him up if they can restructure both Nada and Lardarius Webb's contracts? Because all of a sudden, you have enough room right there to sign one or two guys. Then you've got your rookie reserves coming up and with the draft, because I think there's a separate cap for those guys that gets set. And do you think maybe that there could be enough room to make a one or two signings in free agency? Is free agency where you would go for the Baltimore Ravens to improve? I think safety might be a good bet.
I think you have an excellent class of secondary players coming into this draft. And one guy that, of course, I'm high on at the moment is Collins out of Alabama, who is looking to go mid-round in the first. And he played safety at Alabama, was very solid in terms of tackling, coverage, and I really think Matt Elam needs a kick in the butt in terms of competition, because if the Ravens were to draft Collins out of Alabama and integrate him into the secondary, I think it would be sink or swim for Matt Elam. And if you are looking to have Lardarius Webb and Jimmy Smith healthy for 16 games, you know, knock on wood, they're healthy for 16 games in the secondary, I think it will make the Ravens a much stronger defensive unit. And especially if it gives Matt Elam a burst of confidence to improve his game as a secondary player, it would certainly help the Baltimore Ravens. But at the moment, though, I think they do need to restructure Lardarius Webb. They definitely need to restructure Haloti Ngata, because you're living in a more, I guess you could say, conservative owner's mindset in this day and age of professional sports, unless you're Jerry Jones, who doesn't seem to care what he does with his money nowadays.
Also Dan Snyder.
And
you can put them up there. It's just funny that they're both in the same division.
Yeah, they are very they're very free-spirited when it comes to their money. Hey, I'll give you $80 million. I'll give you $80 million. It doesn't matter if you have a foot injury. It's all good.
Hey, it doesn't matter if we go over the cap in an uncapped year and get fined for that amount of money, which I still found bogus, but both the Cowboys and the Redskins got fined for going over the cap in an uncapped year. They were allowed to do that, Josh.
They were fined
for being allowed to do something.
Yeah. And eventually, down the road, Joe Flacco may have to restructure if he doesn't seem to meet his expectations as the starting quarterback.
That will be next year. Yeah. I'm thinking that's going to come next year, because at that point, he's going to be making Haloti Ngata numbers, and that right there is something that you just cannot hold water on this roster.
By the way, nothing to worry about this year, but next year, guys that you may want a franchise tag, you have Marshall Yanda and Justin Tucker coming up in 2016. But we're going to have to worry about 2015 coming up, because the Ravens are going to have a lot of financial solving to do on their side of things in free agency.
This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
Ronda Rousey, the rowdy UFC female competitor who is now 11-0, Ray, 11-0 in mixed martial arts, 9 wins by submission, 2 wins by knockout. The question on this podcast is she the most fearsome athlete in the world today? Not the most fearsome female athlete, the most fearsome athlete in the world today, period.
Okay, here's what I'm doing if I'm Nintendo, all right? I'm calling Ronda Rousey's agent, and I'm asking them, how much would you license for a Ronda Rousey's tap out?
Are you kind of reverting back to the 8-bit games that featured Mike Tyson's Punch-Out back in the day?
And make Ronda Rousey the final boss that's almost unbeatable.
I don't know about that. I mean, I think if you were looking at her, if you were looking at her contemporaries, I guess you could say, like Sarah McMahon, Misha Tate, and I guess recently Kat Zingano, they would look more like formidable bosses than Ronda Rousey. You look at Ronda Rousey, you really wouldn't think of her as a fearsome athlete because she kind of cleans up really good for a female athlete. Most of the time she looks, you know, grimy, like she spent 8 hours at the gym sweating it off. But she reminds you of like an early years Julia Stiles, but more athletic. But when you look at Ronda Rousey in the octagon, you literally have to add up the minutes of every fight that she had, because it doesn't seem like she spends time in the octagon. She literally makes short work of every opponent that's come into contact with
minutes,
her.
How about seconds, okay? If you combined all of her fights together, it probably wouldn't even equal a full UFC title fight.
No, absolutely not. I mean, and if you look at her mixed martial arts record from when she started in March of 2011 up until recently, when she beat Kat Zingano at UFC 184, and I gotta say this, when I see that fight, and by the way, I'm sure you can see that fight on any video playing website because it's only 14 seconds. I think it's Instagram worthy now.
Instagram and Vine worthy because that's what she called. Josh, she called that. She wanted to say that she wanted this fight to be on Instagram and Vine. That's what Babe Ruth does. Babe Ruth, he called the home run. Remember, he pointed out at the center field, and then he hit it the next pitch. That's what Ronda Rousey basically did right there. So does that make her one of the more fearsome athletes in the world today? If you can call a dominance like that when your opponent is 9-0 coming into the fight and Kat Zingano being a formidable athlete of her own, and she just makes quick work of her in about 14 seconds, yeah, I'd say that is very, very fearsome. And this woman has the world on her finger right now. And they have people, you know, legitimately claiming that she can beat men in her weight class. And that is no small feat for Ronda Rousey to accomplish in her very short but accomplished MMA career.
All right. Kat Zingano, before this fight, was 9-0, respective mixed martial artist in her weight class, purple belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, going up against Ronda Rousey, who is a black belt herself. And Zingano, her game plan, when you watch it on that video, and believe me, folks, you can't miss the video. It's literally 14 seconds. It looked like a fly wanting to take on a spider, and the spider was in its spider web, just ready to take on any comers that was willing to come into contact with the web. Zingano was looking to take on the spider, and then, like nature, the spider ended up winning and tangling. It's Kat Zingano. And now Kat Zingano is a meme now. She became a meme that night.
Did you know that in Australia, a spider actually took on a snake and the spider won?
I would believe that, absolutely.
Okay, so, yeah, you compare it to a fly going to a spider in 14 seconds, and Kat Zingano, I mean, just another notch in Ronda Rousey's belt. She joins Misha Tate. Misha Tate on there twice, by the way.
By the way, Ronda Rousey, during that fight, well, after she got up, there are photos of this on Associated Press. She was laughing, Ray. She was laughing at how I hate to use this for less of a better word, it looked like a pathetic game plan by Zingano, and Rousey was laughing it off. And of course, you're seeing the memes out now with Brock Lesnar in attendance saying, "Brock is pleased," or "Hey Paul, I have another streak to conquer." But no, folks, Brock Lesnar's not going to fight Ronda Rousey. I mean, that's not going to happen.
I would pay to see her
fight
a man. I would
pay to see that, absolutely.
Not just Brock Lesnar. I'd pay to see her fight a man in her weight class.
Yeah, but you got to think, though, if this was basically submission, you could probably say that Ronda Rousey, she trains against men, though, Ray. I mean, I guess let's throw the suspension of disbelief out there for a second. Would you pay to watch Ronda Rousey take on Brock Lesnar? Let's just say for one round. Would you pay to watch that fight just to see what would happen?
That's probably not.
Because it would be kind of uncomfortable to see a guy that size take on a woman of that stature.
I would say yes.
Well, yeah, that too.
There is a reason why they have weight classes, Josh.
I know that's a reason they have weight class. Suspension of disbelief, Ray. Suspension of disbelief.
I wouldn't pay for a man to fight Brock Lesnar in Ronda Rousey's weight class. 135 pounds versus how much does he weigh? Like 275?
He's about 265, 270 right there.
I would not pay to see that. That's terrible.
Yeah, that... That is absolutely terrible. But we can agree that we do believe that Ronda Rousey can take on men in her respective sport at that respective weight class, the bantamweight weight class. And since winning the bantamweight title in 2012, well, of course, it was the Strikeforce and then, of course, became the UFC women's bantamweight title once it was promoted, she's had 6 successful title defenses in a row. And only one of those fights, Ray, went past the first round, and that was against Misha Tate at UFC 168 when Ronda Rousey, of course, ended her venture for the bantamweight title by using the famous armbar submission that Rousey's now world-renowned for.
Yeah, she can patent that and just basically make a lot of money off of it.
She can call it the Rousey bar. She can market her own candy bars now.
Like I said,
if
I'm Nintendo, I'm getting on the phone with Ronda Rousey right now saying, what can it take to make your own very video game where you're the final boss?
She should get into contact with any health supplement provider and make an arm bar, a sort of a candy bar.
A protein bar.
The
Ronda Rousey arm bar.
The arm bar, there you go.
Nothing beats a Ronda Rousey arm bar before every workout. Yeah.
But all the joking aside of Nintendo, Brock Lesnar, and arm bars here for a second, let's put the question out there. Let's think of athletes that we would consider dominant in their respective sport or fearsome in their respective sport. Guys that you wouldn't want to face in that sport because of either A, fear of humiliation, or B, fear that you could possibly get hurt competing against them. Who would you put Ronda Rousey in that class with?
Maybe Michael Phelps?
You could say that because even though you're not going to come into physical contact with Michael Phelps in swimming, you are kind of afraid that he is going to literally blow you out of the water and just make you look completely sluggish in the swimming pool.
J.J. Watt.
J.J. Watt, that is a good name. But J.J. Watt seems like a nice guy, though. He seems to have that good guy image. He seems crazy and wild, but I don't know if he is that mean, you know, that Mike Tyson, I'm going to eat your children persona, though.
But did you see what he did to, lineman for the Ravens, Good?
I saw that, Ray. We all saw the game.
Yeah. What he did to that guy?
Yeah.
That's a little different, okay? Yeah, J.J. Watt's a nice guy when it comes to off the field.
Very good guy, too.
But on the field, monster.
Yeah. Would you put, let's just use this for fun. Would you say Floyd Mayweather's in that class? He doesn't knock people out, but let's face it, he is intelligent in terms of the boxing ring.
I think, actually, there was a little bit of a conversation between if Ronda Rousey could take Floyd Mayweather in the ring, and I think she said that she would be able to take him. And
Floyd Mayweather said, I don't know who he is, or...
I don't know what Floyd bounced back with, but at the same time, yeah, Mayweather-Pacquiao, that fight's happening, yeah, whatever. But isn't it great, though, that the biggest attraction right now in mixed martial arts, and not because of the sport being down or anything like that, it's just because of the stardom and everything, is a woman. Everybody pays to watch a woman.
A marketable female athlete, too.
Yes, female athletes in general, and Ronda Rousey's up there with one of the greatest athletes, and she's constantly in sports magazines as a top athlete. And rounding out this segment right there, Ronda Rousey in the Sands of Time, do you see her growing UFC women's or mixed martial arts women's competition in general?
I think that women's mixed martial arts is transitioning pretty well, kind of like how Layla Ali transitioned female boxing in the early 2000s, of course. Since then, it has kind of taken a nosedive in terms of the competitive field, just like most of the weight classes.
Just like boxing in general.
Yeah, just unless you're in Mayweather and Pacquiao's weight class, then that's the quote-unquote money weight class right there. But needless to say, I do think Ronda Rousey is hands down the most marketable female athlete in the world today and one of the most marketable athletes. She's got two big films coming out this year, right? She's got the Entourage film coming out, and she's got the seventh installment of the Fast and Furious series coming out, which, of course—
Seven of those?
Fast and Furious 7. And we know that's going to make $1 billion at the box office, so she's definitely going to get a lot of exposure there. And it's nice to have that type of persona in the sport, because if you look at other sports, you look at tennis, which is ruled by the Williams sisters, which was ruled by Sharapova and countless others. And you look at golf, which is ruled by Michelle Wee. And yeah, other than that, you look at other sports and say, well, you know, we don't really have a hero in softball. Well, you don't have a hero in the WNBA because the faces seem to change every 8 years. Well, in mixed martial arts, you now have a face that seems to be the constant poster child of that exact sport, not just in female, not just for female competitors, but for overall competitors. And it is safe to say, and I guess it's safe to be confident in your masculinity and say, you know what, I just could not take Ronda Rousey in a mixed martial arts fight, and I don't think most men could either. She is, without a doubt, the best at what she does. Now, here's another interesting topic to add on to that, Ray. Cyborg Santos, who was a very dominant female mixed martial artist several years ago, who basically was known for ending Gina Carano's 15 minutes of fame when Gina Carano decided to face Cyborg Santos in the octagon. Cyborg Santos is still that main opponent that...
Justino now, by the way.
Justino Santos. Well, her nickname was Cyborg, of course. But
well, just call her Cyborg.
Well, Justino Santos, of course. I think she is the Pacquiao to Rousey's Mayweather. I get you're going to have your critics out there that say until Rousey takes on Santos in the octagon, of course, Santos is going to have to drop in weight or Rousey's going to have to take the sacrifice and move up in weight, vice versa. But anyway, until we see that fight, of course, you're going to have critics saying, well, Rousey's facing cupcakes for opponents. But looking at who she's faced, Ray, she's faced quality opponents. Catanzaro was 9-0 before this fight. 9-0. And she was like the fly getting eaten up by the spider.
Yep, and you're going to be the fly eating up on the spider in my two-minute rants. You want to go first? You want me to go?
Why don't you go first?
Everybody under the golden sun saw the Power Rangers short film in the past week. It was quite the week for the internet, so to speak, because net neutrality rules were proposed by the FCC that everyone probably agreed on, except for the cable companies themselves, who wanted to put Morse code out there and saying, well, hey, we're losing our ability to be monopolies. How dare you? And then you saw to where everybody wanted to know what color was the dress. It's blue and black, by the way. And everybody wanted to see the llamas going up against the police. But another thing that was very popular on the internet last week was the one Power Rangers short film. And people saw this and were going nuts over this video. It was dark, it was gritty, and it was very, very over-the-top violent. It almost looked like a Tarantino film, so to speak, or maybe a more recent example, the new Dread movie that came out. So everybody was looking at the Power Rangers short film. They all had opinions about it. Jason David Frank, the guy that actually played the original Tommy Oliver, the Green Ranger and the White Ranger, he was more of a PG-13 kind of guy, didn't like it. They actually approached him to play Tommy Oliver in the short film, and he turned it down just because of the direction of the story. But another person that disagreed with the direction of the story in the video itself was the owner of the Power Rangers, Saban Entertainment. They sent a cease and desist order to both Vimeo and YouTube to have them take down the video off of both video distribution sites. And I was looking at the way they took it down. They didn't really have a ground to stand on because it was parody. It falls under fair use because this was a parody. It doesn't have to be funny to be parody, even though there were parts of the Power Rangers short film that was funny. James Vanderbeek in there being one of them. Like, when was the last time he was in a serious role? But luckily, with fan outcry, Saban Entertainment realized the errors of their way. They brought the video back, and now we can see what hopefully is a Power Rangers movie come in a couple of years from Lionsgate, but maybe tone down the violence a little bit. This is the movie you want to see.
Went a little over in your two-minute rant there, but hey, that's okay because we didn't have one last episode. But yeah, speaking on your Power Rangers one, though, of course, yeah, I felt the language was a little too forced there. I just think, you know, you were cursing just for the sake of cursing.
As I said, just tone that down to PG-13. That's a fantastic movie.
Yeah, make it seem realistic to a point there. But my two-minute rant is going to be about the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Well, not just the Pro Football Hall of Fame, but more so the Pro Football Hall of Fame involving pass rushers. There was an old colleague of mine back in the day, you might know him as Rob Long, who once used the term Hall of Very Good. Now, these were players who played in the National Football League, who were very good in their respective positions, but at the same time, just did not have that suspected merit of making the Pro Football Hall of Fame, at least not yet. Well, recently, former Tampa Bay Buccaneers lineman, defensive lineman, Simeon Rice, you may have known him for being a part of that memorable 2002 Super Bowl team with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers led by John Gruden, was a three-time Pro Bowler, had 122 career sacks in a total of what appeared to be 14 seasons in the National Football League, six with Tampa, five with Arizona, one with Denver, and one with Indianapolis. And looking at the field of work there with Simeon Rice, he went on the air recently and talk about Michael Strahan. He criticized Michael Strahan being in the Hall of Fame because he said, quote, "I never had a quarterback fall down for me to break a record." That is just taking pot shots right there. Especially Michael Strahan, who, by the way, has went to one more Super Bowl than Simeon Rice. And, oh yeah, won one in the final season of his NFL career. And, by the way, that record that Michael Strahan has, he still had to go to other quarterbacks. He had to go through other quarterbacks to get to Brett Favre. And looking at other guys in his respective positions on the defensive line, Simeon Rice can still afford to wait three more years before his name is called and he gets that yellow jacket in Canton.
Charles Haley had to wait a long time, and I thought he was well-deserving to be a first-ballot Hall of Famer.
And going out of defensive line, Art Monk. Art Monk had a bunch of records at wide receiver. How long did he have to wait?
Chris Carter as well.
Chris Carter, I think, was self-inflicted because he has several enemies in the media.
Okay, well, yeah. We can talk about Hall of Fame on another edition of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. We are out of time on this episode, so Josh, what are we talking about next week?
I think we are going to be talking about some exhibition games for the Baltimore Orioles. We're going to be looking at guys who, hopefully there's somebody that hits two home runs in a game, but that's wishful thinking.
Maybe Josh Bell comes back?
That's not going to happen.
No, we can see who's going to be the next Josh Bell in spring training. Who's going to be that one standout guy that leads the league in home runs, and then you never hear from him ever again?
Will or Darius Webb and Haloti Ngata restructure their contracts? And
I certainly hope so.
And if they do, that's going to be big. Oh, yeah, by the way, will the Lady Terps on the next edition of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All be two-time Big Ten champions, regular season and tournament?
So they'll be Big Ten champions outright.
Outright Big Ten champions. And also, will the Terps end their regular Big Ten season on a high note? That's going to be a lot of positive news coming in for the Maryland side of things on the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
As long as it's positive, it could very well turn negative.
Yep, and folks, do not forget to check us out on Spreaker and Stitcher, sfmsports.net, Audio Boom. Subscribe, and do not forget to subscribe to the Sunday Night Sports Delight. Trust me, you'll enjoy that read.
Yes, thank you, and God bless.
Well, my work is done here.
What do you mean your work is done? You didn't do anything.
Didn't I?
The Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.